Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, do you remember studying, writing papers, all that jazz back in high school and college?
Now I'm doing jazz hands. Yes, I do remember it. I recall frenzy activity happening at the 11th hour.
Yes, I remember.
Mostly.
Yeah, I remember staying up like all night to write things in college. I remember getting up early to do homework. Then being late as I ran off to class and then finishing the homework in class or skipping lunch to do a homework assignment, do that afternoon. Everything was always the last minute.
Right. And this is called the student syndrome, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's really common. I'm sure everyone at some point, particularly in their student years, experienced this where you were just putting everything off because you were making a deal with yourself saying, oh, yeah, I'll do it in a couple of days. I'll do it in a couple of hours. And then bam.
Because there's always something more entertaining or worthwhile to do in the present than later on.
And I'm sure that that would have been something like other studies rather than beer consumption or other libations.
Well, I did not consume libations in college for the most part.
But okay, what would you have occupied yourself with?
Well, it would have
been
stuff like, Team Fortress or Quake or something, I guess.
Okay, yeah. Other leisure activities.
Yeah, I wasn't exactly living it up most of my college career, I have to say.
All right. Well, I don't have any comment on that for myself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the procrastination, it is a huge deal. It is perhaps an inseparable part of who we are. Everyone does it.
Mm-hmm.
Even the go-getters out there, there's something on that to-do list that's not getting due attention. And it all boils down to procrastination. We've been trying to fight this for ages. And
right.
We still don't have it completely kicked. Or anywhere close to it. So what exactly is it? We're going to discuss what procrastination is, why we do it, some of the ideas out there about how we might defeat it, and whether that's really an achievable goal.
Yeah, can you really vanquish it?
Yeah.
And just so you know,
can you ever actually get around to vanquishing it?
Well, yeah, you can put a plan together. You can clean the plan.
Oh, man.
Dust it off.
You can have a board meeting about it.
You
can put together a committee to study procrastination and put together 10 steps on best standards and practices towards defeating it.
Then you can blog about those 10 steps.
Yes.
Yeah. But look, this is not a modern phenomenon, right?
Right.
Sure, there's been an uptick and for reasons we'll talk about later. But just in case you're wondering, it actually came into our vernacular and around 1532, I believe, the first instance of the use of the word procrastinate.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The actual, like, English word procrastinate.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And there's a book from 1852 called Thoughtless Little Fanny, The Unhappy Results of Procrastination. So this was on people's minds.
Thoughtless Little Fanny?
Thoughtless Little Fanny.
Like, don't have such a thoughtless little Fanny. Like, never mind.
No, we're not talking about fannies.
Like, Fanny, because it's like, get off your fanny and do something, right?
Well, maybe that's where some of that came from. Who knows?
Well, even though the word is relatively new in terms of human history, the idea is, of course, has been around for as long as we've had stuff to put off doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's if you look back in the Mahabharata, the ancient Indian epic, which we've discussed a little in the mm-hmm. past when we were talking about ancient
weapons,
technology and weapons. I've been really into it because I just forced my wife to set through several hours of the Peter Brook Channel 4 filmed adaptation. Peter Brook did like a 9-hour version of the Mahabharata, and then they cut it down to like 6 hours or 5 hours mm-hmm. for TV, and then they cut that down to 3 hours for the DVD, and it's really cool, but my wife had to suffer through it because it is a little slow.
You know you're a lucky man right
yes,
there.
Okay. I am.
Yes,
I am. But there's a part in it where the character Bhishma is talking to King Yudhishthira, and he's telling him about these fish, right? That there are three fish in the water, and there's a fisherman coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like the apocalypse for these fish. And one of the fish in the water says, all right, I'm a fish of action. Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's hop to it. Let's get to some water where we're not going to be threatened by this fisherman. And then there's another fish, and this fish is more of a thoughtful planner. And the fish says, look, I'm going to think this over. I'm going to do a little research. I'm going to crunch some numbers. And then when the time for action comes, I will act and I will be prepared to act. And that's good. Both of these fish are great. But then there's a third fish, and that third fish is just like, meh, you know, I'm not going to worry.
Well, is that fish just completely hamstrung by the idea and therefore becomes a slacker fish?
Yeah, kind of just a slacker fish. Just like isn't going to put forward the effort to mm-hmm. act now, is instead going to just be like, well, what the fisherman does tomorrow is completely out of my mind. So Bhishma says, thus everyone meets with destruction, like the procrastinating fish, who from want of intelligence cannot divine the hour of danger. That man, again, who regarding himself clever does not seek his own good in proper time, incurs great danger, like the Sakula who had presence of mind. So it's really interesting. Ancient texts, they're already talking about, you know, the wisdom behind tackling procrastination. You don't have to act right away. You know, mm-hmm. you don't have to be the person that's like, oh, here's a challenge. I'm on it. At least be the fish that is planning things out.
The contemplating fish.
Yeah. And as we'll discuss in this, you tend to see like two types of procrastination with anybody. We're either putting off something that we really do not want to do,
mm-hmm.
like taking out the garbage or unloading the dishwasher or doing our taxes, something like that. Or we're putting off something that we really want to do, or we think we really want to do, or we feel like we should want to do.
So the stakes are higher in that instance, right?
Yeah.
And the expectations and probably the fear surrounding it.
Right. If you look in Islam, the Arabic word for procrastination, taswif, primarily concerns the postponement of good deeds. So there's more of an emphasis in Arabic
mm-hmm.
on procrastination as the putting off of, say, you know, doing this great endeavor that you were planning, you know, writing that book you always wanted to write, or finally donating to charity, or, you know, or whatever your particular.
So there's more of a lighting of the fire under the duff to get things done.
Yeah. And then hitting on Buddhism, here's a quote from Surya Das, an American-born Lama in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And he says, we have to stop procrastinating, pretending that we have forever to do what we want to do and be what we long to be. So he ties in this whole idea that a lot of procrastination is sort of, on some level, feeling like we're going to live forever and we have indefinite time to achieve these various goals, obligations, mm-hmm. dreams, etc. C.S. Lewis, of course, the Christian writer and sci-fi fantasy mm-hmm. fictioner, says, there is no other day. All days are present now. This moment contains all moments. I really I enjoyed sort of looking around and seeing what different people had to say about it. So we've been thinking about it for a long time. There's a lot of philosophy and religion tied up in actually stirring people to action and stirring yourself to action.
Yeah, and let's talk about some statistics behind this too.
Like, yes.
What's going on here? There is a 5-year study Actually, this is the irony here. It was meant to be a 5-year study, but it took 10 years to complete. Not making this up.
Headlines but, love that.
Yeah, journalists love that stuff. By University of Calgary professor Pierce Steele. It's a 30-page study, and it's actually pretty exhaustive, but it concluded, among other things, that in 1978, only about 5% of the American public thought of themselves as chronic procrastinators. But now, today, it's about 26%.
Huh. So the number has gone up quite a bit.
Significantly, yeah. And the culprit, just guess what the culprit is, the reason why this may have gone up.
Oh, let's see. The last 25 years, I'm guessing the internet?
Yes.
And all its lovely distractions?
That is exactly it. Pierce Steele also attributes to the Minesweeper game.
Really? I never figured out how to play Minesweeper.
I know. I thought, well, he kept and all the things that I read, there were all these quotes of that Minesweeper game just taking over the nation.
Is it? Did it ever?
Yeah,
I think
for him.
Okay.
I'm going to guess that. I don't know. But it's really interesting because it's a hard thing to measure.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Slate.com had a great article called Procrastinators Without Borders. And what they were saying essentially is, okay, here is a study that is ripe for research. You know, how do people procrastinate in other cultures? Because, you know, you can look at Americans and you can say, okay, there's a high incidence of self-reporting of procrastinating, but perhaps that's because we're really into self-disclosure, right? Okay. Americans are. And you can say there's a high incidence in Japan, but you could say, well, that's also because if someone were to say they were procrastinating, that's sort of a cultural norm of self-criticizing oneself.
Okay.
And so it would make sense that they would say, oh, yes, I'm a procrastinator, and this is part of my problem. So there's it's sort of hard to measure it in other cultures, and also how is it perceived there, right?
Okay.
Because we know that a color is a color in one culture and a color in a different culture, right? It's all how we sort of construct this reality,
right,
of how we perceive things.
And of course, there's also something to be said about how different cultures perceive time slightly differently,
mm-hmm.
right? And this comes down to basically clock time versus event time.
Yes. And there's nature time too, right?
Right. Yeah. Nature time as well, which of course is just, it's light out. It's dark out.
Right.
The sun's coming up. The sun's going down.
Right.
So it's like, when are you planning to eat dinner? Are you planning to eat dinner at 7 o'clock sharp? Are you planning to eat dinner when everyone returns to the house? Or are you planning to eat dinner when the sun comes down?
Right.
These are
exactly.
Not all necessarily the same time.
Right. In different cultures, it could be wildly different times that they actually mm-hmm. occur. Robert Levine is a social psychologist and the author of A Geography of Time, and he maps the different perceptions of time between urban and rural settings, corporate cultures, ethnic groups, and academic disciplines. Mm-hmm. And he puts forth the idea of a multi-temporality.
Okay.
So it's sort of this idealistic, like, you know, possibly we could start to move between nature time, event time, and clock time, depending on the situation. But what you'll see is that in most Western cultures, we work on clock time, monochromic time, right? Monochronic
right.
time, rather. And that's a linear timeline. It moves us from one task to another. Where if you're in event time in another culture, then let's say that you make a date to study with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And you make the date for 7 o'clock. And in event time, you wouldn't actually be expected to show up at 7 o'clock, because what might happen between you showing up for that time and when you actually do is that a friend could come over and want to listen to music. And so it's much more like, okay, well, I'm just going to go with the now.
Uh-huh.
And it's less of a concern about the future. It's more like what's going on right now.
So it's like dudism, the dude abides.
Yes, it's very much so like this. And Levine found that the quicker we speak, walk, eat, and drive, the more of an economic boom we get right there. So the communities that are much more structured around clock time tend to be ones that, and this is no surprise, have bigger economies, more luxuries, higher incomes, and so on and so forth. And I thought this was interesting, that the top 5 countries using the index of pace of life, as he calls it, or time consciousness, from fastest to slowest are Switzerland, Ireland, Germany, Japan, and Italy. And the 5 slowest or at least time conscious countries are Syria, El Salvador, Brazil, Indonesia, and Mexico.
Huh.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, here you go. Here's a good example of how time And this perception of whether or not you're procrastinating could be wildly different from one culture to another.
Well, having been to Mexico and having been to Germany, I can say that there does feel to be a drastic difference in how time is perceived and how time passes in those two countries.
Well, as we know, Germany is famous for its transportation, right? And for always being on time.
Yeah.
And adhering to the clock time.
Well, I'm not the most, buckled down of individuals, but I do have some German blood in me. So there are times where I'm like, where is someone to enforce the rules and to put strict limits and beginnings on this thing, you know?
And then you reach for a strudel?
Yeah, and then I reach for a strudel, you know? It's like, why are people coming in late and leaving early for yoga class? This should not be permitted.
So I don't have a problem. I've got Dutch on my side, so I just wear wooden shoes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's got to make down dog different. Really difficult, though.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. It's a challenge.
Yeah.
The question then sort of becomes like, how do we become motivated in these different atmospheres, in different environments? And it's interesting to note that Lady Gaga actually enters this equation.
Yes.
And doesn't she always?
I guess she does. She's always interjecting herself in these philosophical discussions, right? We were of course referring to a Psychology Today blog post or article, I think blog post slash article, that was talking about basically pitting Lady Gaga against The Secret. Because Lady Gaga had this thing about where she gets these awards and she doesn't put them on the wall. She like throws them in a closet or something.
Right. She sort of bragged. Well, yeah, I don't know if you say bragged, but her advice to an up and comer was, hey, don't get all excited about whatever awards you've been given. I just pretend like they don't exist anymore. I take them down and I take it down to the studs. And then I have to get those awards again.
Yes. And and the name of this article was The Motivational Wisdom of Lady Gaga versus The Secret. And we'll have to throw a link in the blog post we do with this. But it concerns Sigmund Freud's idea of the irrational libido, the part of our psyche that lives for immediate pleasure. All right. Which actually ties into our discussions here about procrastination, because it's about, it's all about like this present us and then dealing with a future us that is
feed the id,
yeah,
feed the id and give its instant gratification, right?
Mm-hmm. So, in order to accomplish this immediate pleasure, the libido uses what Freud termed a primary process, where it produces a memory image of an object needed for gratification in order to reduce the frustration of not having been gratified yet.
Okay.
So, basically, this would be, and like an example of this would be like if someone was like, man, I sure wish I was a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
That looks great. And then you imagine yourself as a rock star and you just sort of sit there in your high school class or behind the wheel and you sort of stare off into the distance and see yourself as a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, scratch that itch. And then the itch is scratched and you're like, okay, I'm dead. I'm good. Now back to what I was doing.
Okay. So this is the fantasy part of it, right? And
this is
how it relates to The Secret.
Yeah. We imagine everything from revenge to accomplishment, whatever it may be, without doing anything. And we receive the pleasure from the image alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, The Secret, on the other hand, can we say what The Secret is? Can we be sued for revealing The Secret?
I don't think it's a secret anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it has that red stamp on the cover.
I know,
it's so official. I hate to break the seal, right?
It's been on Oprah and all sorts of stuff. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the concept, at least, right? Sort of this law of attraction.
It's like you imagine it and make it real.
You put out your wish for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put that out into the universe, and I know I'm probably massacring this, but I will admit that I have not read this book. So this is my piecemeal understanding of it, is that once you put out that wish, that energy, then that is going to attract your wish fulfillment.
Okay.
So that it comes to you, whatever it is.
I have read other things that make similar arguments for this idea of manifesting what you want in your life. And so some of these even take a sort of quasi-quantum physics approach by, sort of like looking at the idea that all possible realities exist somewhere. So if you were to focus, you could force yourself into the physical, into the alternate realities where the desired events have transpired. So there is a reality where I'm a rock star. There's a reality
okay.
where I clean up after rock stars.
Mm-hmm.
And all I need to do is focus hard enough and I can move my current self more toward the rock star persona than the rock star cleaner upper.
Okay, so there's a problem with this, though, if you're actually motivated to fulfill this for yourself, right? And that's where Lady Gaga comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's relying on an expectation that she has that's a framework based on her past experiences.
Right.
So she already knows what it takes to get to this goal and fulfill it.
Right.
And not only that, she's created a lack, right? Because mentally she has removed those awards, those accolades from her, from becoming a symbol that is already fulfilling
her
desire.
She may think it's like, man, I wish I was famous and successful. And then she looks up at the awards and she goes, there I am. And then day accomplished. And so she takes them off and she's like, oh,
yes.
I wish I was accomplished and famous and all that. And then she looks up and the wall's empty and she makes a little frowny face.
Dude,
and
she sees nothingness. Stuff, right? Yeah. Right. And then she starts to levitate like a Zen Buddhist. I made that part up.
So over the last decade, as this article lays out, there was a study at New York University, and they used three different groups to study which of these approaches is more successful. There's a fantasy group that essentially follows the path of the secret here, mm-hmm. and they imagine what they have already desired having come true. All right, and then there's a control group that's the baseline. People just do left to their own devices, and then there is a mental contrasting group, and this is like the Lady Gaga model, where
okay.
they mentally contrast by fantasizing about what they want, and then immediately afterwards they compare where they are now with where they want to be. So this would be the whole fantasizing about being a rock star and being like, oh, that's kind of cool in my head, and then you're back in reality and you're like, whoa, I'm not a rock star at all,
mm-hmm.
and then perhaps imagining the steps that would take you to that desired reality. So anyway, the results show that the Lady Gaga-styled mental contrasting always does a better job than pure fantasy. And so the suggestion here is that the secret mode is kind of flawed.
I just love the fact that someone took Lady Gaga's quote about taking all her platinum records down, and it's something like, she said something like, I pretend I haven't sold a damn one and I've got to do it all again. Like, they took that quote and then they applied it to a study.
Yeah.
Along with The Secret, this book, The Secret, and bore this out. I think that's pretty great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how you do it. You take the science, you throw Lady Gaga or a really strong verb in the headline, and you got yourself a science news story.
It's got legs.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a minute right here after the break, we are going to talk about whether or not there's a unifying theory of procrastination, why we do it. And we're going to talk about how you can overcome your procrastinating ways.
This podcast is brought to you by Intel, the sponsors of tomorrow, and the Discovery Channel. At Intel, we believe curiosity is the spark which drives innovation. Join us at curiosity.com and explore the answers to life's questions.
All right, and we're back. Are you ready to listen to the rest of this podcast, or have you been putting it off? Procrastination.
That's what you mean?
See? No, you have to finish this podcast.
I do?
We're halfway through. It's like that.
I'm going to go grab some water.
It's like that quote from Macbeth where he's wading through the blood and he's like to turn back now, I'd have to wade through as much blood to see it all the way through. So that's where we are. We've got to wade through the rest of the blood.
Wow, you're dark, man.
Yeah.
I like it.
So we're talking about procrastination. And is there a unified theory?
Mm-hmm.
Because we discussed that. We discussed humor in a recent podcast. And we talked about a unified theory of humor where they say, what is humor? Well, here you go. I'll lay it out in like a few different steps. Complete explanation. Can we do that with procrastination?
In theory, we can.
Okay.
Right? Okay. And so the temporal motivation theory posits that motivation can be understood by the effects of expectancy and value, which could be weakened by delay with differences for rewards and losses. So what we're talking about here is motivation equals expectation times value over impulsiveness times delay. So if you plug in the conditions of a scenario in the denominator, that impulse in the face of gratification, right? What would be the underneath expectation and value? Mm-hmm. If that is weaker than the proposition of a good chance of a successful outcome, then you are less likely to procrastinate.
Okay.
Which sort of feels like a dumb moment, you know, like, oh yeah, okay, of course, because you would think, right, that If it was a good chance that you were going to do great at this task,
mm-hmm.
And you know, you didn't have really a good reason to put it off, that you would get it done.
Right.
So that's the point where I say, well, that makes sense, but we're crazy humans and we're sort of flawed in our logic. And sometimes we do things to really mess ourselves up. You know, we self-deceive or we make something bigger than it is. And so we don't accomplish something because we, even though we're excited about it.
Okay.
Right. That's the problem I have with TMT.
Okay. But to break it down, again, it's basically we're more likely to do the things that we expect to succeed at, and we typically discount future rewards in favor of immediate rewards,
mm-hmm.
which comes down again to I can have fun now versus acing that test tomorrow.
Right.
Or I can not have fun now and ace the test tomorrow, which is more real. I'm not having fun now.
I
want the fun, right?
Yeah.
And this instantly brings to mind something called a Ulysses Pact.
Oh, yeah. You were telling me about this. This is...
Which is a great, to refresh, of course, is the myth of Ulysses, who's on the ship. He's sailing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he knows the sirens are coming up, the beautiful naked ladies that crawl out of
singing
the ocean.
Singing to him.
Singing to him. And they will lure everyone to their deaths. They mm-hmm. will sing so beautifully, and they will be so absolutely naked that all the men on the ship will climb into the water and drown.
Uh-huh.
So Ulysses is a pretty smart cat. So he's like, this is what you're going to do. You are going to tie me to this mast
mm-hmm.
and tie me so tight that when the naked sirens start singing, future me won't be able to do anything about it because past me is brilliant. So it's like it's past Ulysses versus future Ulysses,
mm-hmm.
and he binds future Ulysses. And then when future Ulysses rolls around, he's like, oh, my goodness, somebody untie me. I want to go drown with these naked ladies. And past Ulysses like, ah, ha, ha, I gotcha.
Yeah, well, and I think what's interesting about this is that he's got the long-term goal in mind, right?
Yeah.
So that's really, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more about how you do vanquish procrastinating, but that's a really big, important part of that. He's got the past experience to draw on, mm-hmm. and he says, naked ladies, yeah, I've seen them before. My big goal is to get past you guys and live.
It reminds me, did you ever watch Strangers with Candy?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember Jazzy?
Oh, who's Jazzy?
Jazzy was the the old jazz singer band teacher that was in one episode, but he would he was really attracted to the ladies, so he had to put a post-it note on his hand that says, don't touch the girls, Jazzy. And so there's a scene where he's like reaching after a girl's hinder.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sees the post-it note and he goes, ah, you're too fast for me. And it's hilarious. But it's a sample.
So it's like the opposite of the Ulysses Pact.
No, it's exactly the same. It's past Jazzy influencing future Jazzy and saying, hey, future Jazzy, don't do anything stupid.
I see. So the post-it note was, yes.
Yeah. But so a Ulysses Pact is sort of the same thing, and it comes back around to that idea that we're always going to go for the immediate pleasure is going to appeal to us more than the distant pleasure, even if mm-hmm. the immediate pleasure is something as fleeting as candy is good versus the distant pleasure is living longer or being healthier. You know, you can tie this into any number of addiction scenarios.
Well, and you were telling me about, I think, the ultimate example of this that you heard on Radiolab.
Yeah, it was where, what can go up against this? What can defeat the immediate desire for pleasure if future greater pleasure won't do it? And the thing is, you need something that you have in the present really strong, such as a really strong emotional feeling.
An outcome that's so repulsive
yeah.
that you would be completely ashamed with yourself.
So this lady was trying to quit smoking, so she decided, she made a pact with herself, ironclad pact, if I smoke, I will donate a whole bunch of money to the KKK.
$5,000.
Yes, $5,000. And she was a big civil rights supporter, so this was just against the idea of doing this stood against everything she believed
mm-hmm.
in. It would be like the ultimate, like not only just humiliating, but she would be supporting a racist group that she despises.
Mm-hmm.
So her current shame, her current displeasure, however you want to frame it, her current adversarial position to the KKK way outpowered the present urge to smoke.
Right, because she would say, like, she'd wake up in the morning and she'd reach for a cigarette and she'd think, oh, no, I can't.
Right.
I cannot do this.
Yeah. It's kind of like if future Jazzy was calling up present Jazzy and present Jazzy's like, I don't know, future Jazzy, if you were here, maybe you could talk me out of this, but you're not. Who? And then future Jazzy's like, well, who's there? Who can actually talk to him? And he's like, oh, I'll call up his revulsion to this. You know?
Right, so. Yeah. That's all Jazzy needed.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting about that, again, is just going to this idea of, like, how do you really overcome procrastinating? Because we're so good at self-deception again. And this is from a side blog, How to Avoid Procrastinating, Think Concretely. And there's a clue right there. You have to be less abstract and more concrete about the decisions that you make.
So, and also about how much time it's going to take to do anything.
Oh, yeah. Hofstadter's law, right?
Yeah, Hofstadter's law that says that anything we think about doing is basically going to take longer than we think it will.
Even if you take into account Hofstadter's law, it's still going to take longer.
Yeah, like there's no...
It's got a recursive quality to it.
Yeah, so we end up with, the planning fallacy, where we plan to do something and we're never going to time it just right. You can pencil in 8 different things to do on your vacation day or in your work day, and you're not going to get to all of them because everything takes longer than it should, or you're not factoring in travel between the things, you know?
Yeah, yeah. All right, so what are your tips here?
My tips?
Yeah, not that we normally give tips, but, you know, we're researching this. We thought we'd share it with you guys.
Okay, so I ran across a number of different suggested ideas. One is the idea of setting up dummy goals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't set up big goals, but set up dummy goals.
And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, and part of this, the source I was reading this on tied it into the paradox of hedonism,
mm-hmm.
which is if you seek happiness or pleasure, you won't find it. But if you set a goal of, say, winning a karaoke challenge, you might just have fun trying to achieve that. So in a way, it's kind of like shoot for a lower star. and you just, you know, and it's kind of like setting more realistic goals, but also setting dummy goals along your towards your ultimate goal.
Okay.
All right. So there's this idea of structured procrastination. You can't defeat procrastination, but you can structure it. You can turn one negative quality against the other. And this comes from John Perry, a professor of philosophy at Stanford University.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically comes down to, all right, procrastinators have excellent self-deceptive skills. So you have this to-do list. And like we were saying, one of the big things about procrastination, we all have a to-do list, and we never end up finishing it, so we're always unhappy because we have an incomplete to-do list.
Right.
So he's saying, all right, you have your – on this to-do list, move an item that you need to accomplish further down the list. Like say your number one goal for the day is to actually sit down and do your taxes. And then you have things like clean out the dishwasher,
mm-hmm.
and feed the cat,
right.
mop the floor. All right, so we've all been in this position. You really don't want to do your taxes. So you find yourself achieving these, going after these other achievable goals,
mm-hmm.
like, ooh, like doing my taxes is going to take forever. I'm not really certain about my ability to do it right.
Mm-hmm.
But I can wash that floor. I can feed that cat. I can unload that dishwasher at a perfect level of success. So you end up doing those things you feel you can succeed at better. But anyway, the structured procrastination idea is to not put the taxes at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
Put it a little further down, and then you will end up skipping the other things. You'll be thinking like, oh, I don't want to just unload the dishwasher. I hate unloading the dishwasher. What else is on my list? Oh, taxes. I'll go do my taxes so I don't have to unload the dishwasher. And I cannot say I really buy this idea.
I was about to say, that seems like, you know, you're trying to fool yourself into doing your taxes, and you're a little bit more wily than that, you know?
Yeah, I feel like I'm too smart for that particular tactic,
and not
like that, even if I'm the one pulling it off.
I also say that doing those little tasks always makes me feel like I'm readying my brain for accomplishing the bigger, unwieldy task.
Like clearing the slate? It's kind of,
pruning the field of my mind, and, you know, so to speak.
Yeah.
So that when I sit down and, you know, I have actually like no other recourse now because I've exhausted my list, and I sit down and I have to do it.
Well, it's like in a video game, say you're fighting 3 lesser opponents and 1 like stronger opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea of picking off the 3 smaller ones.
Yeah.
So they're not nipping at your heels when you're trying to tackle the really dangerous opponent.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if that works for other people, but, you know, it's certainly, I mean, it is procrastinating, but
yeah.
It's helpful procrastinating if you actually follow through with the final thing that you're wanting to do, right?
I do like the feeling, like if I'm working on stuff there are a lot of different tasks that fill our days here at How Stuff Works. I mean, and it ranges from really cool stuff like the podcast or writing an article to more mundane things like picking out which blogs to put on the homepage or,
mm-hmm.
you know, things of this nature. And I feel like even though those smaller tasks are not necessarily very skill intensive,
mm-hmm.
I like the feeling of having the day cleared to tackle one challenging and or fulfilling task.
Yeah. And I think you'll see, too, a pattern there because a lot of people will wait until that task wait until later in the week to fulfill that big task. So they've gotten all the other stuff done. Okay, let's talk about animals. Is there a possibility that animals procrastinate?
I don't think so. I mean, anybody who has pets, tell me when you have ever seen your cat or dog procrastinate. Because generally they have certain needs, and when those needs arise, they will take care of them. If the cat or dog is hungry, it will eat or beg for food. If it needs to use the restroom, it will at least try to go outside or go to its required place of toiletry. So
yeah, you don't see a lot of procrastinating. But how would you? I mean, the other behavior is hard to report, right?
Right, because the other big thing is they don't have a lot else to do. I mean, it's not like they have a lot of long term goals, dogs and cats, or any animal really. Even the really Herculean tasks that various animals engage in, such as like long distance travel or some sort of like complex or taxing mating ritual, they're just going to do them. There's no putting it off. It's just that's what you do. And they don't have any additional tasks. Like they're not wanting to become rock stars or write books or do their taxes or anything of this nature.
Well, we don't know their hearts. Maybe they do want to become rock stars. But I will say this. Slate.com, again, the article Procrastinators Without Borders talks about lab-induced procrastination in animals. So it's really important to talk about that lab-induced. James E. Mazur, he's a psychology professor. He was studying the procrastination habits of pigeons, and he trained them to peck illuminated keys at irregular intervals in exchange for a tiny wage in bird feed at the end of their workday. I know all of this is crazy. The wage was higher for the birds that worked most consistently and didn't take any breaks. In the end, pigeons turned out to be such layabouts that even a fourfold increase in food could not incite them to peck in a timely fashion.
This may be the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I mean, it's insightful. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this is like wasted science or, you know, shrimp on a treadmill or anything like that.
Did you say shrimp on a treadmill?
Oh, yeah. It's the latest thing making the news is that, you know, it's like certain groups politically love to rail against scientific studies that they judge as ridiculous and pointless.
Right.
So they'll pick out one little aspect of a study, such as shrimp on a treadmill, and then they'll go nuts over it.
Right.
Money, you know, university or tax money is paying for shrimp on a treadmill, whether tax money is actually involved or if the study involves a whole lot more besides shrimp on a treadmill. But at any rate, the idea of teaching teaching pigeons to procrastinate, I mean, it's such an artificial scenario here because you're taking an animal and then you're imposing this very human system.
You're giving them a wage.
You're giving them a wage and a task. And then you're judging them on their ability to, on how steadfast they are with this stupid job you just gave them.
Well, see, if anything, I think that it just can, like, it points to the fact that procrastination is inherently a human invention, and it's probably just a clause that we have in the invention of time, right?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like we've given these pigeons some stupid things to do, and then they're not that really into doing them. We give ourselves so many stupid or unachievable things to do, and then we have a hard time rallying to go do them. So it's actually a very telling study, I think.
Yeah, that's what I think. It just keeps pointing back to the humans, not the animals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like why did you invent taxes? Why do you have these taxes to do every year? Because it's like that's the same system. We invented it and we're not that into it. So by inventing complex tasks and long-term goals, we invented procrastination because it's just it doesn't really gel naturally with the brain that we've evolved.
Well, you know, if you're following the Matrix theory, then it's just one of the ways to occupy ourselves, right?
Yeah, I guess.
So that we just don't all die in the vine. We need something to get our hackles raised up about. Speaking of hackles, I got a couple of emails from folks who commented on our Parasomnia podcast.
Oh, yeah. This is the one about the crazy sleep and extreme sleep.
Yeah, extreme sleep. And I think at one point you had mentioned that, you know, people should, you know, contact their doctor and get the sort of medication they might need. And I made the remark, which was sort of out of context, that I think I said something like, I'm not one to seek sleep aids.
Okay.
And so this raised the hackles of a couple of people because they interpreted that as me saying, like, I don't condone sleep aids or medication. So I just want to make a clarification that I do condone medication and sleep aids.
Okay.
I think that I had said that, and I was trying to remember this, because we had had a previous conversation, and I had said something like, I don't usually use sleep aids, but I probably should.
Right.
So that's the out-of-context part.
Well, and then, of course, the added layer that, like, there are certainly sleep problems, and then there are sleep problems. And
right.
And I don't think either of us have had to really deal with actual, like, real hardcore sleep problems. Like,
I mean, some people, yeah, they are completely, you know, dogged by insomnia for four or five nights in a row. So, and obviously those would, you know, at any point, whatever someone's personal choices to make with sleep medication is, you know, that's their own choice, and they should pursue that.
And I should also mention on a lighter note, there have been times where we have said Richard Attenborough when we, of course, mean David Attenborough. David Attenborough is the naturalist who has given us so many great shows up on BBC and Discovery, so much great narration, so much messing around with animals. His brother Richard, basically.
Sir Richard.
But basically, I mean, for all my money, all he's done is he got eaten by a dinosaur once. So there you go. Or maybe he didn't. He didn't get eaten by a dinosaur in the movie, just in the book. Okay. Anyway, David Attenborough, he's the one we like.
Yep.
So there you have it. If you would like to keep up with us, find out what we're blogging about, what we're podcasting about, what we're thinking about podcasting about, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. We are Blow the Mind on both of those. One word.
Yep. And I'm very curious to know what your favorite procrastinating activity is.
Yes.
You know, what do you do to put off the inevitable? So,
and if it's listening to this podcast, keep it up.
Yeah, that's right. So feel free to share with us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.